Good evening, everybody. My name is Sean Kelly. This is my show, Into the Night, with Sean Kelly. So how is everybody doing tonight? I'm doing great now. We got a hell of a guest on now and coming up. And I'm really excited to hear what he has to say, because honestly, it's all new to me, you know, and I like to learn. I like to learn about different stuff and different the way, you know, other people, you know, do things. I just have to look at my phone here. But we are on 105.3 New Orleans, and also we are on 107.7 Mississippi. Okay. I'm just getting right to it. I mean, tonight's guest is Reverend Frater Crowe, is an ordained occult minister, practitioner, and mystic, spending the better part of the last two decades connecting with spirits and entities of various natures and planes through the use of experimentation and esoteric sciences. He has been able to break barriers to new depths of connection and realization through his methods and unorthodox, that's interesting, unorthodox, and to some extreme, he has never stopped venturing further down the rabbit hole. He is Magus, and you might have to help me out with this one word, buddy. Magus of the Kateri of Samal Arcane Occult Order.
It's pretty close. Pretty close,
thanks. Team leader of the Celestial Oddities Paraseekers, and the owner of the
Necrobethan Commissary, which is my oddities company. So I own a few different companies, but that's one of them.
Oh, okay. Great. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Sean. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you coming on. To get a little bit to tell the people how I know about you is that I have a very dear friend, Tara. Okay, and also Natasha, and they talked about you, and I really wanted to go to your lecture that you had at the Lilith, you know, at the Little Shops of Horrors or something like that. I forget what it's called.
A Little Shop of Lilith, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's right. And we hooked up, and I'm really looking forward. I have a lot of people listening to you tonight, so. Would you like to tell what's going on, how about you, and how you got to where you've been?
Yeah, absolutely. And first and foremost, I'd like to apologize to anyone listening out there for the delay in the start of tonight's episode. I was having some communication or some technical difficulties here. I had to restart over and over and over again for it to let me in properly, but we are here. So glad to be here this evening. Thank you, Sean, for having me. I am the Magus of the Kateri of Samal Arcane Occult Order. As Sean had said, my name is Reverend Frater Crowe. My journey has been very interesting and in depth over the years in many different fields of just strange and unusual, from paranormal and supernatural phenomena to occultism to oddities, like I said, skeletons and bones and all kinds of just obscure things. So my journey, you know, if you want me to just kind of start out how I got into this field.
That would be great. Thank you.
I was around 5 years old. So 5 years old at my original home growing up. My mom still owns that home. You know, she was taking a bath. I was playing with my matchbox cars on the linoleum, but like the little tile granite floor. It was a really old Victorian home. And I seen something out of the flash of the front of my eyes. And when I looked up down the hallway towards my bedroom, I seen a full body apparition of an older man standing there staring at me. Now, at this time, I didn't understand what ghosts were. I didn't know what this was. I just knew there was a grown man standing in my hallway of my home, and it did something strange to me. Not just was I scared because there was a man in my home, but it actually like took the air out of my lungs. I started stuttering, pointing, and my mom's like, "What's wrong with you? Man in the hallway." Well, she jumps out of the tub, starts looking all around the house for this guy that isn't there. Mm-hmm. Well, throughout time, that specific incident, I think, was supposed to happen to open the doorways of perception for me to be able to experience a lot more throughout my life. Because from that moment on, though that might have been my first interaction, it certainly was not my last. And it just started to happen very frequently and to a greater extent over and over again. I seen that man, you know, numerous times afterwards. I seen an apparition of a dog in that home multiple times. And then there was what I call the peeping Tom, who would lean over the side of doorways and stare at you while you laid in bed at night. And if you look in, you'd see him lean back real quick. And I seen him hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. So it launched me into wanting to explore what these were. You know, that as time went on, I understood, okay, these are ghosts, these are spirits, but why? What are they? How are they here? And that led me into, you know, becoming an investigator or researcher in my teens, and I've been doing it ever since. So, I mean, been involved in the paranormal for 30 years, but been investigating.
And what started your group? I mean, was it hard to find somebody? Did you actually start in the paranormal field first before you moved on to being a reverend and different things?
I did. So I, as a teenager, like I said, throughout my childhood, it was just kind of curious of what these things were, but I didn't know about like EMF readings or EVPs or anything like that. I just knew these spirits here, and I've heard of ghosts and I understand these are ghosts. But when I hit high school, roughly around 14, 15 years old, I started, like I said, I was always kind of the strange kid. I was the one hanging out in graveyards at night. I was the one going to haunted places. That's cool. That were backwoods by myself. And a lot of times I would go alone. So it wasn't uncommon to catch me at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday at 15 years old by myself, you know, in the woods or in the graveyard, just talking to these spirits, but with no equipment, just talking to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I started getting further and further into it, and I got into occultism when I was 15 years old and began to start understanding it from a very different direction of being able to do ritual and connect with spirits, and began to do that. So it was kind of an accumulation of ritual / investigation, but like I said, not your normal style of investigation, which led me as an older adult to say, you know what, I want to start my team. So a few years ago, I started the team. It was kind of late into the game, you know, 20 plus years in, to start actually building a team together, because it was always really just me. And even still, I do a lot of investigations 100% alone. I mean, I've gone to Bel Air Demon House alone. I've gone to, you know, pretty much you name it. I went to Indiana State Sanatorium, drove in 18 mm-hmm. hours and just did that by myself. You know, so it's something that I have always just been involved with, talking to the spirits.
You said that you were in Bel Air, Ohio, the Demon House?
Yeah, I've been there about 7 or 8 times now. I've spent, each time I've done a weekend. So I've been there probably for a total of about 14 or 15 days of my life.
So, you know, Kristen then, huh? I've gone down there 3 or 4 times, and I got a story to tell you about there. Yeah. We're especially down in the cellar.
Yeah, cellar's a very interesting place in that house, yes.
Extremely. And I was down there with a group member, and we were sitting around doing, you know, EVPs and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, we heard some, like, someone sliding across the floor, right? Honest to God, it came up on this guy, and he fell into my lap, scared the crap out of us. But what was amazing about that in the cellar, we really believe it was either an alien or a cryptid. The reason being, because it honestly looked like a duck. Okay.
Okay.
My cousin, who was in the group, he drew a picture of it because he saw the same thing. And so as we were leaving, we were looking at this person drew a picture that was exactly the same thing. It had a duck bill, and that is a very haunted house.
It's a very haunted house, and it has different doorways to different wormhole areas of the ethereal realms. I mean, one of the first times we were there, it was my group that I was a part of. They're now another group that's doing very well for themselves, but they were there as part of my group at the time, and then another Pittsburgh group. So it was a merging of two groups together to explore the Bel Air Shadow House or Demon House. And we were doing our investigation. It was night two, and one of the team members of the opposite team started to get very agitated out of nowhere, started throwing his equipment into a box, started saying, "I'm done. This investigation's over." And we're like, "What's wrong with you?" And we didn't know this other team that well. So I never met this guy before in my life until the night before. And I said, "Hey, man, what seems to be your problem? You're throwing equipment around, you know, this and that." And he's like, "I'm just done, man. This house ain't got nothing. There's nothing here, this and that." So we went into an Estes session, and I put the headphones on, blindfolded myself. And I do that with a mixture of transcendental hypnosis that I do in ritual. I do that in investigation and getting some really good results. Well, during that session, I was hearing, obviously, the responses. They're asking the questions, only I'm hearing them. And I'll get visualizations with that in vision. Mm-hmm. And I was getting a visualization of something in that attic. And it was a man in a hat in the corner. And you could feel a very dark presence to him. And he was very, very angry. And what's very interesting is he locked eyes with me, because at first, and it's hard to explain, it was almost like I was the room. I wasn't in the attic. I was the attic. I could see the landscape of the attic, and this thing was just moving around in it. But then all of a sudden, it noticed me seeing it, and it locked onto me, and it said about three or four solid lines across the ghost box in some type of Germanic language, like a full-blown paragraph. And as soon as it said this, all of a sudden I got grabbed very firmly on my arm. Now, I snapped out of my trance session, yanked the headphones off. I was actually being grabbed in real life from one of the team members. And as I pulled my headphone off and my blindfold off and looked around, every single person in the Bel Air house, except for one other person, was standing in front of me looking terrified. And I says, "What's going on, guys?" And they pointed behind me on the couch. When I turned around, that same team member that was very agitated, throwing his equipment, acting very strange, was in fetal position, squeezing his own knees and talking in tongues. He had become possessed at this point, which I had seen several times before, but no one in that house had ever seen a possession before. And he started talking in tongues, making face contortions. It became a very wild night. So I don't want to give any negative publicity on the Bel Air house, because I know that they probably don't want this stuff being talked about, but it does have the opportunity to interact with things at times that will come through that are of a very dark nature. Absolutely. We did have to perform an exorcism. Luckily I do know how to do that. And we got this thing to leave this man, and he slowly came back to normal. But for everybody else in the house, they had never experienced anything like that. And, you know, that was our first time, I think, at the Bel Air house, was that incident there.
I real quick, we went down there with my group. It was a weekend. It was a Friday and Saturday night. So we get down there on Friday. I mean, there are a lot of happy spirits in there, you know, nothing bad, nothing major. You know what I mean? It was just getting good evidence. And then come Saturday afternoon, you could all of a sudden see and feel the house change.
Yes.
Okay. It went from happy, good, you know, having fun, to it became evil. Do you know what I mean? There was a really, really bad energy with it on Saturday night. And it really messed with a lot of people in my group with that.
Well, I've said before about the Bel Air house, the team I was a part of releases documentaries and things on places they've been. And I was featured in one of them saying that, you know, a good predator doesn't pounce on you right away. The lion stalks through the fields very slowly and watches its prey before it pounces on it. And that's what this entity at the Bel Air house does. Is if you stay there one night, probably not going to have anything happen to you. It seems to be time and time again, at least for me and from what you just said, that if you stay two nights, it'll watch you the first night. You'll have activity, everything's fun, everybody's having a good time. And when it starts to become evening the second night, every single time I've been there, all of a sudden it changes. And exactly. The second night is very different. The second night is very intense. And the second night usually involves someone being messed with. One of the other times, a female member of the group started to go into some type of zonked out state. She was mumbling to herself. She was rocking back and forth. It started to try to take grips of her. And I had to come over and interfere and stop that. She was luckily stopped before it possessed her. But it does have an entity there that does prey on the weakest members of the group, and it will try to overtake them.
Did you, when you went to the Bel Air house, did you talk to Kristen, because she's a really good person? And I kind of like it, you know what I mean? And it's, you know, I like going down to the Bel Air house. And that's how I feel. I mean, we did get some good stuff, but also some pretty negative stuff. But for my listeners out there, can you explain occultism, the occult? Could you share some about the occult?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different branches of occultism and esotericism that it's very vast. I mean, when people hear occult, they ought to, a lot of times get like this spooky Hollywood pop culture image of like, ooh, taboo and like darkness and evil. But the thing is, cult merely means hidden. It's hidden arcane knowledge. So throughout time, there have been many different groups, from right-handed path groups of like Christian mystics to left-handed path organizations of Luciferians and Satanists and Diabolists and so forth. I mean, the occult spans over all different belief systems, all different backgrounds and time period, though we're often made to believe through pop culture when we hear the word occult, it's something dark and spooky. Now, I did start out in the dark and spooky. And when I was 15 years old, as I said, I was already prone to going to graveyards and doing investigations or talking with spirits. But I had started to look heavily into ceremonial magic and ritualistic conjuration. And I attempted my first spiritual evocation, which is the bringing forth of a spirit to visible appearance in front of you. And I did it at a very, very powerfully, chalked ley line area. It was a cemetery that's very well known to be haunted. So a couple friends wanted to experience this ritual with me. They were there more as spectators than people serious about ritual. I was there as someone who seriously wanted to perform the ritual. And we did a mixture of the La Messe Noir Black Mass into a blind evocation, meaning that we summoned a spirit forward, but we didn't have a specific spirit in mind. We called forth any spirit which would want to appear before us in the ritual circle. And it worked flawlessly my very first time. And that's not to gloat and say like, oh, I did great. No, it actually worked flawlessly. And it's surprising that it did. And it was dangerous that it did, because it did not work the way we had thought it would. We thought, okay, we're going to see a full body apparition of some sort. Right. No, it took possession of my best friend at the time. So I just mentioned a moment ago that possession at the Bel Air Demon House was not my first. I've seen multiple. Well, the first was this instance of my first occult ritual at this graveyard, where it did take full-blown possession of my friend and was terrifying. And, you know, we got it to leave him eventually. But the thing is I don't know if it's because of this, but he's never really been right the same ever since. He's never been right again. So you have to be careful. So I spent the next 10, 12 years reading, studying, and researching everything I could, so that I would make sure that when I do ceremonial magic, that I'm doing it properly, I'm doing it protected, I'm doing it with knowledge, I'm using my will properly. And that is something that I practice now daily, every day of my life. I am a ceremonial magician, so you can't see me. To this side over here, I have a 250-foot square ritual temple, I guess you could say, to the left of me right now. And I perform evocations of spirits. So I do summon spirits to visual appearance, which to a lot of people that hear that, it sounds like fantasy. It sounds crazy. It's something that's very, very real, but it's also very, very dangerous.
You know what? But this is the 21st century. So it just seems like everything is pretty cool that, you know, a lot of people would accept what you have just said. You know what I mean? Now, some of these rituals that you have done, in the spirits that you have called through. Is there any spirit that has been like, did not go back, or do they pop up on times where you don't expect a spirit to come up on?
So sometimes during ritual, strange things will happen. So I always tell my students that don't look for the paranormal activity whenever doing the ritual. That's not the point. The point is connection. The point is to do an alignment with the spirit that you're calling. Now, if you're doing spirits of the dead, if you're doing necromancy or something like that, you don't really want to align with those spirits. There's reasons that we don't have really time to get into tonight. But like if you're doing, let's say, more of a left-handed path ritual, and you are calling upon like Asmodee or Asmodeus is another name people would know him by, or Belial, or one of these type of ancient deity spirits, which people would call demons, but they're actually daemons. You can it depends on your definition. So originally the word daimon is Greek for replete with wisdom, lesser god, a demigod, where they would actually call upon and use these spirits for enlightenment to raise human vibration higher and become a more superior being. And Hebrews had changed the word to daemon, which still was the very same. These lesser beings than God, but still very powerful that one could work with, though a lot of times they looked at it like you don't want to work with them, but you could. Socrates, for example, would talk about in his writings having his own personal daimon. And it was a spirit who guided him that was external from him, that he would talk to, and it would give him guidance. Now, Christianity had taken that a step further because they needed a way to have a stronghold, to have more adherence to the religion. So they demified them and made them from daimons to daemons to demons. And now anything that was this other spirit that you could communicate with was evil. It would ruin your life. It would possess you. It would destroy you. If you work with them, you'll go to hell, which, by the way, folks, they created hell as well. Hell never existed prior to Christianity. No other religion had hell. The right. Closest thing out there was Sheol or Gehenna Noam in Judaism, which was a land that you went to for penance for a short amount of time, like a short prison sentence, and then you were released. Then you went back to the God force. Well, okay. Christianity said, you know what? We're going to make it scarier than that. Let's make this eternal fire pit of hell that you will burn in forever. It doesn't exist, folks. If you can literally pinpoint the time period that it never existed before then, and all of a sudden man created it, it didn't exist. Right. So, you know, they used these fear-mongering tactics and took a lot of the gods and turned them into demons. For example, the goddess Astarte, beautiful goddess of fertility that was worshipped long ago, prior to Christianity's existence. When they stepped in and wanted to demify things, they took Astarte and turned her into a male demon called Astaroth. Astaroth is a foul-looking demon. Its breath would kill you if you don't hold the magical ring to you that they use in ceremonial magic. They did this with all of these demons. You know, Baal, the sun god, also a god of fertility. They turned him into Baal, this horrible, evil horned god. So it was common practice to turn him into these evil beings. But I have worked with both daemons, these spirits that were ancient that you could use for enlightenment. I have seen and interacted with parasitic entities, which I would call the real demons, where they actually will harm human beings and they're external from us. And then obviously the ghosts of the dead. But it's very interesting, and it's hard for someone to grasp in a short amount of time. But most of these things, including ghosts, are external and internal to us. Okay. And when people say, what exactly does that mean? Daemons, for example, when you do ceremonial magic, you have to go into certain hypnagogic trance states of mind to be able to unlock doorways in your mind so that these spirits can actually come out of the collective unconscious of all humanity. When they come out through the use of your will, through the use of visualization and using your five senses, incense, candles, liquid libations. You're activating the centers of your brain, and you can bring forth to visible appearance in something like a scrying mirror, like a medium, like a scrying mirror, and see these beings visually in front of you. So they are internal. They can only be activated internally and then projected externally on a material lens. So when people say, are these beings real or are they all just inside our head? Well, it's both. The same thing with ghosts. Now, people heard that, you know, some people have heard that before with entities and demons and things like that, or daemons. But when I say about it with ghosts, people get really shocked. What do you mean? You don't believe in ghosts? I do, but I don't believe in ghosts how most of the people in the world do, if they do believe, and especially how most paranormal investigators believe.
Okay.
I believe that there is what's called, or what I have coined, metaphysical condensation. There are areas of high vibratory resonance where sorrow has happened, murder and pain has happened, happiness has happened. These things can cause a ripple effect of vibration and frequency to stick to the matrix field that's around us. It sticks to the planes that we live in, and it can stay there throughout time. That is real to me. So that pain and that sorrow happens, something created in the matrix. And when I say matrix, I'm not talking the movie, folks. I'm talking the physical world we're living in. It causes it to be saturated with metaphysical condensation. We, as the vessel, the spirit, because we are the God force. We are the original source in fractalized different pieces. We're a million different pieces experiencing this world as ourselves. We created ourselves. It's really hard to get into, but so you can experience blips of time such as spirits. So when you go, let's say Hillview Manor, for example, you're activating something within your mind. That metaphysical condensation triggers something in your mind to open the doorway to have an experience. It doesn't make it any less supernatural. In fact, I think it makes it more supernatural to me, at least. But that's why three people can be standing side by side. All three have an experience, but all three have a different experience. I seen a man walking with a doctor's coat on. Well, that's, I thought I seen a little girl at the end of the hallway. Doesn't mean either of you are wrong. What it means is that metaphysical condensation caused a chain reaction to open up what's inside of us to have a supernatural experience. And we all experience it a little bit differently. Why do you think when you go to a haunted location that's famous, the first thing that they do is take you on a tour? They take you on a tour and tell you who's there, what's there, what they look like, the story. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter. What it does is that is the primer to feed your mind to when that metaphysical condensation triggers you, it shuffles through that and it creates a manifestation in front of you. Some of those ghosts that you see were never ghosts of the dead. They were never someone that resided in that building. They're not a spirit just traveling through. They came from the collective unconscious of humanity that we all share together. Every one of us taps back to the collective unconscious, which, if anybody knows the famous philosopher Carl Jung, that was what he came up with, is the collective unconscious of humanity. And that's where we come from. That's what all of our thoughts come from. That's where our gods come from. That's how we can experience God. Because when you read and research about an entity, the more you know, when you do that ritual or you do that prayer and you have that divinity touch you, it's because you're so connected that you use that fuel that you know, and you have those chain reactions. That's why they say we are our own gods, because we create our own manifestations. We create our own world and reality, both on the physical plane and the spiritual plane. I know it's long-winded and it's a lot to explain, and I could unpack it much better at another time, but for a short version, that's a little bit of it.
What you just said makes a lot of sense. And now, of all the investigations that I have been on and what you explain, I understand what's going on. But here's a question that there's two questions, but this one, have you ever gone to a place where you did not hear a story?
I mean,
was
so
there?
Well, so I do a lot of investigations in private locations. Like, I've had a lot of different businesses hire me privately on the down low, sign contracts where I'm not allowed to talk about it, country clubs and different places like that, where they're having activity and they say, well, can you please come check it out and see what you think? But we don't want the public hearing about this. We don't want to be in the papers and things of that nature. So they're not really giving me stories. They don't even necessarily know the stories. They're opening up the door and saying, hey, there's some crazy stuff going on here. Figure it out. Mm-hmm. And you still can have activity because, once again, if you're running into a room that has metaphysical condensation in it and it has this energy, it'll unlock that within you. So that metaphysical condensation is real. So there was something there that happened in that room, or there's some type of rift in the ethereal plane that's causing these currents to seep through, which, if you are in tune enough, will react and cause something to happen. Here's why skeptics a lot of times don't experience something. If you have five guys that don't believe into the paranormal at all, and you send them into somewhere like Bel Air or somewhere like Hillview, they'll usually still leave at the end of the night or the weekend with nothing happening. But if you send five people who are very, very big believers into the paranormal and send them in there, they always come out with a ton of stories. Why is that? Because you are opening yourself up to that higher state of consciousness, that higher vibration. And then that mixed with that, I hate to keep beating a dead horse, that metaphysical condensation is like, the metaphysical condensation is the fuel. You being willing and open and raising your vibratory state is the spark. When it hits and it ignites and it causes that explosion, that is your paranormal activity. That's your supernatural phenomena. And you can make it be lesser and higher amounts by the work that you do on yourself. Meditation, mantras, mudras, pranayama yoga, breath work, trance work and self-hypnosis. These things, if you do, you can be extremely sensitive. So when you come across one of those rooms that has that condensation on it, you automatically notice it, you feel it. And if you close and go into a trance state, you can automatically tap into it, which can cause, flashes of things in the past. It can cause visualizations of full body apparitions, but you have to start distinguishing what is just a mirage built from your own mind being projected in front of you, or what is actually happening. Because there is a fine line between both. And people, like I said, have a hard time hearing that. No, that can't be the case, that it's just coming from me. Why can't it? Why can't it not? How do you think miracles happen? And so much other phenomena happens. Whenever we reach those high vibrational states, we can cause amazing, amazing things to happen. What are psychics? People who are in tune. What are healers? People that are in tune. We do have amazing abilities. It's just that most of the populace will never take the time to have a disciplined routine to shape that and grow that. So we sometimes just experience those blips, and we're lucky as paranormal investigators that we believe in it. So we get that blip and it's like, oh, it's like our fix. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God, yeah, I've seen it. Well, what if you learn to tune that in and you can have that happen all the time? Right next to me in my temple, I've had some of the most mind-bending experiences of my life that I don't even need to go to a haunted location, but I still do because I like to find those areas of high concentration and then connect my mind to it, align to it, just like I would in ritual.
That, wow, man, I just got goosebumps. Now you are seriously answering all the questions that I had to myself, trying to understand, you know, what happens when I go and I see this and, you know, feel this or smell it. But my question is, I believe now, maybe I'm wrong, but this is how I feel, that spirit gives people a little extra boost of the mind, like you were talking about, than other people. And it seems like whenever I meet somebody, okay, they're like on the same level where I am, or it's like I'm a loner, and that's the first question out of my mouth. Were you a loner? Did you try to fit into the world? And they just couldn't. But when it came to spiritual work, or psychics, or whatever you want to call it, we kind of like hit on the same level. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Do you think spirit gives more energy to people that they know that they can handle it?
I mean, it just depends, because it, like anything, there's so many different energies out there. So, I mean, you're going to come across spirits that are very uplifting, high vibratory energies that you can connect with and will help enhance your vibration and energy. But then you do have very low vibrational beings that can try to pull you down and feed off you. Now, a lot of times it's contrary to what people believe when it comes to ritual work. I work a lot with what people would call demons. I'm a diabolist. I'm a devil worshiper, and I have no problem telling people that, and they get really thrown off. Wait a second, what did you say? Yes, but it doesn't mean that I don't believe in God. I actually center my life around God, theocentric psychology. The God is the center of all universe, but I don't mean like the Christian sky daddy. I mean that everything in this world is God. The right. All is all, and all is in the all. It's the Hermetic principles. So, mm-hmm. You know, there is a source that created all of us. And as I said, God has really separated himself into 8 billion people to be able to experience himself from 8 billion different sets of eyes that don't necessarily know their God until they raise their vibration high enough to realize they are. It's not to have this complex and say, I am God, I'm some Messiah. No, it's to say that I understand that I am the fractal of the God force energy, given this egoic personality to experience this physical world, that I can learn and grow from it. And if I do it right, eventually I won't have to come back here, but we do come back again and again and again until we get it right. And we don't have to, until we open that, what the Hindus would call the thousand petal lotus, until we break samsara, we break the matrix. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we work with different beings that'll help raise that. And demons, for example, or daemons, what a lot of people would call devils, they help me do that. Whenever I work with them, I'm not asking for evil things to happen in the world. I'm not asking to do black magic and crush and kill people. I'm not asking for monetary gain. What I am asking for is illumination. I'm asking for knowledge and wisdom. I'm asking for, you know, ways to help continue to raise myself to the best version of myself that I can be in every moment and every day. And they will do that, and they will start to guide your hand and help grow you. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you can certainly use spirits, and spirits can use you to help grow one another. It's another thing that people don't realize, that when you work with these demons, you can actually raise their vibration. As they are lower vibrational beings, you can actually take them and raise them up as well. So now you're both elevating in vibratory frequency. And it's a practice that most really don't realize. But, you know, the second part of your question there, when working with spirits of the dead or spirits that once existed, you know, that can happen as well. And they do like, you know, it attracts like. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times spirits will come to you if they feel that you're a good person, and will try to communicate with you because there is benefit that maybe they have by talking to someone who's of the same vibratory state.
I totally believe that. And my role in my group, when I took my group out, is if you show the spirits respect, they're going to come back and respect you. But if I go into your house and you're dead and you're hanging around your house, and I call you every freaking name in the book just to kind of get a reaction, you're going to be mad, correct?
Absolutely. I've never liked investigators who taunt and who call names. I've actually flipped out a few times on public investigations, which I don't do much. I've flipped out on random people before for doing that.
It's ridiculous. I always you know, what's crazy is it was the best evidence I ever got, you know? A lot of spirits that I have dealt with in investigations, they had a message. They just wanted to be heard. You know what I mean? They just want somebody like a catalyst between, like, if I went to your house and a spirit wanted to say something to you, they would go through me. Do you know what I mean? And then I would relay the messages.
Yes.
To you. Yes.
Well, that kind of goes back with that collective unconscious thing. It's really hard to grasp the first time you hear it. So like I said, that condensation that they're leaving is an imprint left behind. But let's look at it this way. Anybody that exists right now and anybody who has ever existed in history, let's not look at them as spirits. Let's not look at them as individual people or bodies. Let's look at this giant cloud, the collective unconscious, okay? It separates into all these bodies, living and already past. All of those egos, all of those thoughts, all of the memories and moments that's ever happened in history, all still remain in that cloud. So that imprint that you come across is the key to the door to that spirit. So you're not actually witnessing the spirit in the hallways at that building at that time. You're witnessing its imprint. And if you do it right, that imprint will unlock the collective unconscious, allowing that spirit that exists in that cloud to then come through and interact with you.
Okay.
So that's whenever you can have a reaction of that spirit. So it's very interesting that you can smell cigar smoke, let's say, for example, and that's a signal. That's the key to unlock that spirit and come through. And we're experiencing that spirit. So it's not necessarily living on our plane. It's living in the collective unconscious, but in the physical manifest world through that condensation, those keys, it unlocks that doorway that we're all connected to so that we can connect with spirits from 300 years ago to 50 years ago. They're all in that box. And so are we. The only difference is we're still by a etheric cord connected to a physical avatar. And someday when our etheric cord gets cut, we die, you know, our body falls, our spirit raises. You're going to have a piece of that that sticks around in the collective unconscious. And then you have another part that returns to source. There's four stages of the human being. And there's that collective cloud, like I said, and that's really what we're tapping into when we truly have a spirit interaction. Some is just residual. Some is just echoes. Some is fabrications of our own mind. And I've put that to test before, where if you get people who are very in tune, we can go to a high activity area. We can sit down and meditate and channel our thoughts and focus and actually cause manifestation to happen. And it's not from a dead person who existed. We can actually cause ghosts to come. We can actually cause objects to move. It's much more simple than you might realize, but it's not from a spirit. You're creating it. We are the creators, like I said, but there is also the spirits. So there's different levels to this realm. It's just a lot of people want to bunch it all together. It's just all ghosts. It's all demons. It's all this. No, there's a very thick field of different entities and abilities out there.
I'm telling you what, my friend, you just opened my eyes. You have answered all. You gave me all the answers that I have been searching for a very long time. It makes sense. Everything makes sense now. We got about 8 more minutes left, but for me, can you please, and to my listeners out there, can you explain Luciferian religion, or what's a Luciferian?
So Luciferianism, you know, it's interesting because I put up a post recently. A friend of mine who was one of the guests on my radio show, Knights of the Nephilim, Baal Kadmon, world famous author, multilinguist, academic, very smart man. He's written many, many books. I'd say probably about 50, 60 plus at this point. And he put up a video called The Luciferian Conundrum. It's something that I think everyone should see, both in the occult world and certainly not, because there has been an injustice of the world for over 2,000 years of people talking about an entity called Lucifer. Lucifer never existed, not only in real life, folks, but also in theology. Lucifer, it's an error. People say, is Lucifer Satan? Is Satan Lucifer? I worship Lucifer. Lucifer was a mistranslation in the Bible. In the Septuagint and in the Torah, in the original versions of the Bible, it said, oh, how you have fallen, great Lucifer, or great morning star. It's talking about the king of Babylon. And when it talks about Lucifer, Lucifer was only ever a title in Latin, which meant morning star. It wasn't an entity. In fact, in the original writings, Lucifer was lowercase, whereas every other name or every other entity, even Satan himself, was capitalized, 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 capitalized. But every time it mentioned the name Lucifer, it was lowercase. Why? Because they weren't talking about a deity. They were talking about a title. And originally they were talking about a human man, the king of Babylon. somehow Christianity, once again, and I'm not, you know, bashing any religion, I'm just saying truths, they turned it into, there's this entity called Lucifer, and he is the great son of God who was so prideful that he wanted to be in the throne above God himself and was cast down as a fallen angel and became Satan. Well, that's actually very inaccurately wrong. And then pop culture and everything else for 2,000 years has painted shows like this television show Lucifer and this and that, and people eat it up. And even left-hand path practitioners who are ooky spooky practitioners, Satanists and all this, they'll talk about, I love Lucifer and worship Lucifer. I'm not bashing anybody that's Satanist or anything like that. But what I'm saying is, you're talking about, you're so into your knowledge and so into worshiping this entity that was never an entity. So if you're looking out there, folks, and want to really be enlightened, the Luciferian Conundrum by Baal Kadmon on YouTube. It's a two-part video. It's phenomenal. Guy's a genius, and he'll break it down for you much better than I did. But Luciferianism can still be a practice. It can still be a religion where it's looking within yourself. Once again, there's that spark that makes you. Sure, there's a personality and an ego and thoughts and emotions and feelings, all of this earthbound ego, that character that we play. I'm Freighter Crow, but really I'm not. That's just my character for this manifestation. Right. Behind that, there's that candlelight burning on the wick. There's God. There's that spiritual essence. That is the Luciferian flame, the flame of ever-burning consciousness. And Luciferians, there's a lot to it that's hard to unpack this evening, but it's really about looking within yourself and finding that Luciferian flame and raising yourself in vibratory rates, not to blame yourself or not to blame anybody else for your shortcomings or failures. You blame yourself to take responsibility for the things you've accomplished and also the times you have failed. And pretty much be a soldier. You are the governor of your life. And through certain practices and beliefs, you can raise your thoughts, you can raise your consciousness, as I said before, your frequency and vibration, and become a much higher elevated being. And as you start to raise in frequency, you see different frequencies. There's so many different dimensions around us right now that we don't have access to with our everyday mundane mind, because we're at this vibration here. They might be at this vibration here. If you can learn to elevate that, you can tap into worlds of angels. You can tap into worlds of deities and demigods. These things actually exist on certain thought planes, but we can't tap into them if we're way down here. You can't see what's at top of the mountain if you're standing at the bottom. You got to climb to the top. Once you're at the top, you can see a lot of crap out there by looking out over the landscape. And that's very true, folks. I mean, through meditation and trance work, you can literally open doorways to things that are unfathomable.
I need to have you back on again.
Absolutely. Drew,
I mean, I'm glad that we became friends. I really do, because I've learned so much from you tonight.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back on.
I do have another show that I do. It's called Chasing Prophecy. That is on the same network here. And it's a 2-hour show, so maybe that might help out a little bit more. But I want to thank you for being on the show. I've learned so much in this short period of time. And from what everybody has told me, they are correct. You are a good man. You are a good person. And I'm glad that we can keep a connection going, because I would like to learn more. You know what I mean? I've been in the business for so long. And I thought I knew everything, but you just threw everything I know out the door. And it just makes a lot of sense. It really does.
Well, I appreciate that, Sean. Absolutely. And it's always good to make new friends and have conversation. Would love to come on the other show to be able to explore even further and go more in depth. I had to pack so much in there, folks, so I apologize for throwing so much thought-provoking things in such a short amount of time. But we can always expand on those and expound on those a little further down the line.
That would be great.
And Sean, if we're not pushing ourselves to our limits, if we're not learning new things and re-questioning our old ways constantly, then we're not growing. So like you said, I just changed everything you ever believed. But then hopefully, you know, a year from now, we're learning new things that change even those thoughts. And then again and again, constantly refining to get to that spiritual gold. Alchemy, you know, taking that base material and turning it into spiritual gold.
Yes. And again, thank you for being on tonight.
Absolutely. I appreciate you as well, brother. Thank you.
All right, brother. Well, everybody, I want to thank Reverend Frater Crow for coming on. It was an awesome, awesome show. And I learned a lot, you know. And I just want the more knowledge. You know, there's more knowledge. Knowledge is just give me some more, give me more, give me more. And hopefully, you know, I will learn more. But children, if you can, please go to your parents and give them a hug and tell them that you love them. And parents, if you can, go to your children, give them a hug and tell them you love them. And if you have no children or your parents are deceased, find somebody and give them a hug. Because those three letters, three words, I love you, go a long way.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank everybody for being here. I will be here next week on Chasing Prophecy from 7 to 9 and my show Into the Night. Good night, everybody, and happy hunting. Not just waiting for the producer to come in. I really, really learned a lot. I truly appreciate it.
And like I said, we'll expound on that a little further down the line because it is a lot to absorb in such a short amount of time. But I wanted to at least give an inkling of what I've learned over the years, not only from investigating, but like I said, working in the occult circles. That's where I've really learned a lot through the entities I've worked with. They've shown me how the mechanics of spiritualism and interaction actually work, which blows a lot of people's minds when they hear it. I've never heard anything like that. I'm like, well, I never did either until I was specifically shown. And it's been a hell of a journey.
Well, since we're still live, I want to thank everybody in the chat room for saying some stuff. And I want to say goodnight and Sue and Stacy and Tony and Vicky and everybody. Michael, thank you for being and watching it. We just have to get Joe, my producer, away from the kitchen so he can sign us off.
I appreciate it as well, guys. Thank you so much for your support and watching the episode with me this evening. And if you're looking for anything else I'm doing, just search Frater Crow. I got a YouTube page, Facebook, Instagram, all of that fun stuff. But I also run Knights of the Nephilim radio show, Celestial Oddities, the Paranormal Guys podcast radio show, and put out teachings and things on my YouTube, as well as do in-person seminars, conventions, and classes as well. So there's a lot of material out there to learn, a lot of stuff you probably haven't heard before. Maybe it interests you, maybe not, but always good to hear new stuff and kind of mull it over.
And is there, like, while we're still waiting for Joe to come on to shut us off, is there any other avenues that you would like to go down besides what you teach,
as far as just in life, or you mean like in spirituality?
I love spirituality.
I mean, just continuing to enhance where I'm at. So, I mean, I've studied everything from Hinduism to Hermeticism to Luciferianism and Satanism, Diabolism, Taoism, Taoism. I've looked into all of it, Christianity, Gnosticism. So, I mean, I've been pretty versed on a lot of those things, but to continue to learn the mysticism and theology side and to continue to dive to further depths of ritual and experimentation, I'm working some methods, like I said, you'd mentioned unorthodox methods. I've rebuilt my ghost team or my research team, and we're going to be doing methods of communicating with spirit that no one's ever seen before. It's going to be very, very off the wall. If anybody's seen it, they'd be like, what are these guys doing? It's true spiritual research. And I just really want to continue to dive deeper into that and peel back the ethereal curtain and show people there's a whole different way to talk to spirits.
That Vicky says she learns so much every time she hears you.
Well, thank you, Vicky. I appreciate that. I'm always learning myself, and that's the thing, not only for myself to continue to grow because I thirst for knowledge, but to also be able to teach properly. If you have a teacher who's not constantly upping their game to be the best that they can be, then they're probably not the best teacher. So you got to constantly keep digging deeper and deeper. And I promise to everyone out there, I will never stop until, you know, I am stopped. So hopefully that never happens.
I was raised Catholic all my life up to 18, you know, Catholic grade school, high school. And as I was getting more into the investigating, into the spirit world, into the paranormal world, one day I watched a show on, I think it was National Geographic, and they were talking about Lucifer in the Bible, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I really got interested in it, and I did some research. And do you know Lucifer is only mentioned one time in the Bible?
It's only that one time. They mentioned Morning Star, actually referring to Jesus Christ multiple times. So I have made years ago the distinguishing connection between Lucifer and Jesus being the same type of character, a character of light. Lucifer was never even necessarily evil, but I take it a step further in what I explained tonight that, yeah, Lucifer never was a character. It's wrong. So you got churches out there preaching to be against Lucifer and don't let, you know, fall to the clutches of Lucifer. And you have all of these things out there. Everything you've ever heard in your life about Lucifer, folks, is 100% wrong because it comes from a mistranslation. That's just fascinating to know that like 2,000 years of people talking about this spooky character that never was a spooky character. It was a human man, a king that was corrupted, that they were calling the Morning Star. And it's fascinating when you start to dig into some of the stories of the Bible and what a lot of the true meanings are and how a lot of it's been misinterpreted. In the beginning, the Elohim created the world. Well, they translated that in the beginning, God created the world. Well, El is God. Elohim is the gods. So the very beginning said, in the beginning, the gods created the world, meaning plural. Right from the beginning, they said there was multiple gods. Yahweh, who everybody believes is the God. He was only one of several gods. He was the governor of the Jews. He was the governing spirit, but there was a governing spirit of every other nation in the world. Yahweh was only for the Jews. So people don't realize that they say Yahweh is God, but that is not true. He's the God of the Jews, but there's also an equal spirit to Yahweh of every other nationality in the world, and they're only demigods to the one true God. There's just so much that people preach, but they don't understand the actual relevance and depth of the Bible and the preachings itself. It's really sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm still waiting for Joe, dude. If you have to go, please go.
Oh, no worries, man. I'm just hanging out until Joe comes. We'll just keep kicking it. You know, for anybody out there still listening, they're like, all right. I mean, there's a lot of extra stuff. Yeah. There's Joe.
I told you to go to 15 after, man.
But dude, it's 20 after 11.
Well, no, it ain't on my clock. And my clock's the only clock that matters.
Oh, okay.
Just keep that in your head right now. Fix that clock of yours, all I can tell y'all. Y'all are doing good. Y'all are doing good, but I'll take us out. And
we'll talk more.
I will take us out now, people.